It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to this episode of Money for Lunch. It's always good to share our lunchtime with you, and as we strive to bring you the biggest leaders to help your lunch be financially as well as mentally nutritious. How's that? That sounded pretty good. All right. Hey, let's just jump right into it with the quote of the day. The quote of the day: the way to become rich is to put all your eggs in one basket and then watch that basket. That is by the late, great Andrew Carnegie, or Carnegie, depending on where you're from. So the way to become rich is to put all your eggs in one basket and then watch that basket, by Andrew Carnegie. Andrew Carnegie, if you're, you know, an American type person. All right, let's get this party started. Today, I am fortunate to be joined by Claudette Rowley. Claudette Rowley is the CEO of Cultural Brilliance, a cultural design and change management consultancy. Over the past 20 years, she has consulted, trained, and coached executive leaders and teams of Fortune 1000 companies, small businesses, academic institutions, and startups, helping them create a proactive, innovative workplace cultures that deliver outstanding results. Claudette Rowley, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thanks so much. Glad to be here.
You know what? I'm glad you're here as well, because I think that a lot of people are not aware of how important culture is in the workplace. That culture, in my opinion, and I'd love to get your opinion on this as well, I think culture supersedes anything else in that company, right? I mean, you can have the world's greatest strategy, but the culture will always beat out the strategy. Your thoughts?
Absolutely. I completely agree with you. And I think that's, as you were saying, is overlooked in a lot of companies. That they and strategy is incredibly important, but they'll put in place a strategy, for example, that isn't in alignment with their culture, and then they'll wonder why they're struggling to get it to work, for example. So culture, you got to understand how your culture works so that you see what's driving your day-to-day results.
Yeah, absolutely. And for our listeners, if they want to find out more about what we're talking about today, if you want to find out more about our guest, Claudette Rowley, you can go to culturalbrilliance.com. You can find out more about her, her team, and her book. So speaking of the book, so what inspired you to write the book, Cultural Brilliance? Because, again, this is a market that's, has a few books out there in the cultural space. But so Talk to me about what inspired you.
Yeah, thanks. Yes, and it's actually an exciting time to have a book on culture out, because there are other books in the space, right, this is part of our bigger conversation in organizations. So I was inspired to write the book because I've been working in organizations for 20 years and working with culture, and I wanted, to me, culture is like the big unsolved problem in some ways in companies, and I wanted to provide my take on a solution, my perspective on a solution, which is to create cultures that really tap into the potential that's available in a company. I feel like a lot of companies leave business potential on the table because they don't use their culture effectively. So that's what inspired me to write the book. I wanted to help solve this problem.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk about what are brilliant cultures that impressed you, and why they're important. Talk about this.
Yeah, so brilliant cultures, they're, as I mentioned, they're organizations, they're cultures that really, that look at the full potential, in the organizational system, its operations, its people, right, and really pull that potential forward so the organization's even more successful. And they're also companies that really get good at adapting to change in ways that actually cause them to be more successful. Google is a great example, I think, of one example of many, many of a brilliant culture, right, where it's an organization that really has put a lot in place around creating an environment of trust, of psychological safety, so that people could really innovate and be incredibly productive. So really, you know, sourcing and using the potential available in the people in the company.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what? It's amazing. People look at a company like Google and they don't realize that one of the reasons that they continue to do what they do is because of their culture. Zappos, I think, is another company that grew primarily because of its culture. You know, they didn't have the low-priced shoes, right? But they had this crazy culture. And I remember interviewing Tony Hsieh, and he talked about, after you've been with the company, I think for like 6 months or so, you know, they will offer you money to quit if you're unhappy with them. And maybe they offer
that.
And maybe they offer it every year. I don't know. But I think that takes a lot of courage. That is when you absolutely are committed to your culture. You want to weed out the unhappy people because they become a cancer to that culture. And I think Amazon, who of course bought out Zappos, they've taken on that same kind of strategy where they'll, you know, once a year they offer their employees like $5,000 to weed out the unhappy people. And I just, you know, to me, that is brilliant. That takes courage, that takes commitment, but this is why these companies continue to grow.
It is, and it's also, it takes courage, as you said, and commitment, and also it's a recognition of how important culture is, right? Like you said at the beginning, it's driving everything. So to have people who aren't in alignment with the culture, who or simply just aren't happy there, really, it drains the energy of the people they're working with. It causes productivity issues, right? We could go down the list. And so it is, like you said, so brilliant of them to actually say, you know what, if you're not happy, we wish you well.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Right.
All right. So let's talk about this. Tell us about the biggest cultural challenges that you're seeing in companies today.
Yeah, a couple that come to mind. One is the, and we, you know, everybody talks, or most people talk a lot about this, but certainly the rate of change, which is huge. And what I see in a lot of companies I work in is people simply don't know how to adapt to it, right? They're not sure how to really adjust to it, work with it, until they've done some work on their culture, you know, until they've really looked at the rate of change we're experiencing, how might we handle this differently? What kind of culture do we need to become more adaptable? So organizations that have more of an old way of thinking about business, you know, it's more hierarchical, it's more top down. We're going to tell everybody what they need to be doing. Those kinds of cultures have a very hard time adapting to a high rate of change. So that's one thing I'm seeing. Another thing that's coming up culturally is more and more folks who want to do work they like, right? They want to use their best strengths. They want to use their best skills and talents. So, you know, those of us that have been in the workforce for a few decades, remember earlier times when you just did your job, right? You weren't, whether you liked it or not, wasn't really part of the conversation in most companies. And and now people are, a lot of folks are saying, especially younger people, hey, I want to be in a good culture. I want to like what I do. And that's forcing some companies to really take a look at how they're handling their culture, because people are leaving, really good people, right?
Right.
They're not able to keep their talent. Yeah, and I think that's another big issue.
And I want to dig a little bit deeper and talk about the money. Some of these people are leaving even though they're being well paid. That's how important culture is, right? They don't like it. They're unhappy.
Yeah.
And in some cases, they will leave either not having a job, or they will leave and take a job maybe that's offering them the culture that they're looking for in sometimes a pay cut. I want to say unfortunately, about two decades ago, I had a personal friend of mine who left a company to go work for Microsoft. He was taking a cut in pay, but the culture is what he wanted. And so to me, that made such a huge impact that that at that time, the culture that Microsoft was putting out really enticed this guy to leave a company that he was, that he had been there for years. He was happy. He was getting paid well. And I think he took like a 20% pay cut to go work for Microsoft.
Hmm. Yeah. And that sounds like it was probably a great decision for him.
It was.
Given what
happened
at Microsoft. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, he did really well. He did love the culture. It was, you know, he's never regretted it. And you know, and he's done well, of course, financially now as well. All right. So let's talk about this. Let's say that I am a business, I'm trying to decide if even size matters at this point, but, and I'm sure it, sooner or later, maybe size comes into the equation. I'm not sure, but mm-hmm. How can I tell if my culture is in trouble? What are the warning signs?
Yeah, thanks for asking. This is, I think, such an important question because it gets overlooked a lot in organizations where, and part of it's because we're in our culture, organizational culture every day. So sometimes we become a little immune to it, right? We just put up with it. We're not mm-hmm. aware of some of the signs. So one of the signs is that people are, as you mentioned just a couple of minutes ago, your culture makes people leave. You have a steady stream of people leaving and a steady stream of people getting hired and leaving again. That's definitely a sign you need to look at your culture. You're tolerating bullies in your organization, right? Which means that you're allowing people to work in an environment that's not emotionally safe for them. You're allowing them to work in an environment where they might feel humiliated or put down on a regular basis, or, you know, or just having to deal with someone difficult or unpleasant. So that means, you know, a culture that tolerates bullies, it means that they're prioritizing that person's, what that person brings into the company over dignity, respect, you know, creating an environment where people can thrive.
Also, right. And I think you see this quite a bit. I'm sorry, I was going to interject. Growing up, you would see this very much in a sales, especially a commission sales environment, where you had people who were, you know, bullies or they were jerks or a-holes, but the company put up with it because they were able to close deals.
Right, exactly. It's a great example. And you know, you're, this person's a rainmaker. They have the biggest account. Everybody, all our customers love them.
Yeah.
Right? And then they come into work and they – you know, there's a great website called the Workplace Bullying Institute, and the people that run it have are researchers in this area, and they actually have outlined how much money a company loses by tolerating bullying behavior. So, it's pretty significant at all, you know, at all levels, including the bottom line. Another thing is people are punished for telling the truth. That's another sign you might be having a cultural issue. You know, I go to my manager and say there's something I'd really like to, talk with you about that, you know, happened to me. I experienced something I'm observing or noticing in the company, you know, whatever it is. And I share my, and by truth, you know, truth is subjective, but I share my experience. And all of a sudden I find out people are talking behind my back, right? Or I'm passed
right.
over for a great project or something like that, that I, you know, we're an organization punishes people for sharing their thoughts or ideas or experiences. You definitely have an issue in your culture. Certainly. And one other thing that's another sign that there might be some issues is if you're in the meetings are silent, right? People aren't speaking up in meetings, and it happens regularly. They're not very effective. You know, those kind of meetings where people just tolerate them. They're sitting there waiting for them to be over. So there's not a robust conversation. People aren't speaking up and sharing ideas or asking questions. That's probably a good idea to start investigating what's really going on.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. Yeah, absolutely. You know, I'm kind of hesitant to bring this up because I find President Trump kind of interesting because to me, he seems to have a lot of the bully type of characteristics. And, you know, especially during the debates, I thought he was, he really brought the debates kind of almost into this, brawl-like, you know, type of debate, right? It was very, to me, it was very much a bully type environment or a bully type individual. And I think that he's interesting to look at. Again, whether you voted for him or you didn't vote for him, whether you're Republican or Democrat, that's not the point. I'm just looking at the guy from a personality issue. When you bring up bully, this guy seems to have some of the characteristics of a bully. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really interesting. It's what it's making me think of is what, you know, when someone has the kind of communication style that the president exhibited during the debates, for example, it takes us away from really, and this is true for the same kind of style in the company, right? It takes us away from talking about what's most important, right?
Mm.
So when I think of a company and a culture, they're there to, you know, certainly make money, but hopefully they're there for a purpose, right? A mission, some sort of vision, something they want to contribute to the world. There are people that are employed there that are charged with solving problems, selling things, right? Improving things in different ways so the company functions better. And so everyone's there to do something and the company's there to achieve something. And when, you know, we're more focused on how somebody's behaving, like the example of the debates, we're taken away from getting our jobs done. You know, we're distracted. It distracts us, I think, from what's most important.
Yeah, and you know what? And so when you relate that to a corporate environment, the same thing happens, right?
Mm-hmm.
And to me, maybe this is a great signal or warning, if you will, that this person may need to be, you know, either retrained or replaced. Because if the company, the company leaders are discussing this person's behavior, it's taking away from other important stuff. So if your energy is being, focused on somebody's behavior, that to me might be a warning sign. Are there any other ones?
Yeah, and that's a great one. Yeah, that you're more focused on someone's behavior than other things you need to do.
Right.
You know, and I think that's a really important point. When we start getting hyper-focused in that way, and we may need to be hyper-focused because of the nature of the behavior, that's another, definitely a warning sign. Others, you know, one is an interesting one is that some leaders and leadership teams develop a habit. Sometimes they're not aware of this until somebody points it out, that someone comes in with a problem or an idea or whatever, and they'll ask for more data and information. And that's on its surface seems like a very logical thing to do. We should gather data and information. But what they'll do is not act on it. And they'll do this repeatedly. Yeah, can you get us more metrics? Can you get us, you know, last quarter's numbers? And then they don't do anything and they never get back to the person. And that is really frustrating and disengaging for people and will stop them from then innovating and bringing up ideas. And that's one that's more subtle. But if you notice that your leadership team does that, or you're a leader and you realize you have a habit of doing it, it's time to step back and realize the impact you might be having. That's another one that's often overlooked. Yeah.
So in a case like that, should the leaders just simply say, hey, we're not interested, let's not do this now? If you're trying to cultivate cultural brilliance, what would be the response to something like that?
I think to tell the truth, right? If they're absolutely not going to do anything about this idea right now because of timing or they don't think it's a fit or whatever, I think they should just let the person know, right? For these reasons, this is a decision we made, and the person may not like it, but at least they have that answer, right? You're not stringing them along by asking for more information you never intend to do anything with. Or maybe a leader does genuinely want the information, they ask for it, they look at it, and then they realize it's not a good idea, right? It just isn't going to work. They sit down and have that conversation with the person and let them know. It's when that kind of communication occurs in an organization, it simplifies things quite a bit, right? It's not dramatic. We're not caught up in being frustrated and wondering what went on. We just get in, we get the feedback, we get the update, and we move on. And it saves a lot of time and energy and distraction.
Sure. All right. And so, again, we're talking about cultural brilliance, the book Cultural Brilliance by Claudette Rowley. And in your book, you describe the cultural brilliance system. Talk about this. What is it and how does it help organizations?
Yeah, the system is a step-by-step process, a roadmap, pathway for organizations to take and use. And so it's really helping a company go through the process of transforming or transitioning their culture into a new state. And so it's just at a very high level, it helps a company understand how their culture really operates, because we can't change what we don't understand. So if you want to change your culture, you first need to understand it at a deeper level. And then it also helps a company say, okay, so now that we understand our culture, what's our target culture? What's the culture we need to have or want to have to be most successful, to support our people, to support our strategic objectives, right? What's aligned with us being our most brilliant, successful version of ourselves? And once a culture, that company, excuse me, has identified that, then designing how they're going to move from point A to point B and integrate those changes. So that's the system in a nutshell. It's really a way for a company to read the book and say, okay, you know, we can do this. We can take this on and start looking at our culture and making some positive changes.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. Claudette Rowley, I want to thank you so much for stopping by and sharing. And I think that this whole thing of cultural brilliance and having a good culture is sometimes overlooked as we're growing our companies. I want to give out your website one more time for those who want to find your book or talk to you directly. They can go to culturalbrilliance.com, or the book's available on Amazon as well, correct?
Yes, it is. Yeah. Thank you.
Well, excellent.
Thanks so much, Bert. Yeah.
You bet. It's good. It's good to have you here. Looking forward to having you back again.
Thanks so much. Look forward to it.
All righty. Good stuff there from Claudette Rowley about creating a cultural brilliance in your business. And I forgot to ask her, you know, does size matter? And I bet you the answer is size doesn't matter. So let's say today you're maybe a solo practitioner in whatever field you're in. You start creating a culture right now. You know, what are your standards? What are you going to allow? And of course, you know, I could be wrong. So you can check out culturalbrilliance.com and get some insights there. But you know what? If you have two or three employees, you have a culture. So either you can create the culture, or the culture will kind of create itself, which is sometimes not good. As always, my friends, let's share this episode with everybody we know. Let's help businesses out there, business owners, create cultural brilliance. As always, my friends, thank you so much for sharing. And remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.